If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
True crime, unsolved cases, strange disappearances. Join me as we travel through the timeline of some of the darkest acts in human history. I'm your host, Kevin Eustace, and welcome to the third season of The Deadly Countdown. Episode 10, Robert Lee Yates, the Grocery Bag Killer. Okay, let's imagine you live in a lovely little suburb somewhere. Life's normal, you've got the everyday white picket fence, everything's fine, and there's an elusive killer that's been on the loose for 2 full decades. But that's fictional, right? No. It's like something from a horror movie. You're going about your everyday life, completely unaware that the person next to you in the store reaching for a tin of beans, or the dad who coaches your kid's football team, could be hiding a very, very dark secret. Well, that's the exact kind of terror that Robert Lee Yates brought to the residents of Spokane and beyond. I often say, and in fact many podcasts often say, imagine, but genuinely do. Imagine you're just sat there now, wherever you are listening to this. Imagine your neighbour is an actual serial killer. You can't, because it seems fictional. Welcome back to The Deadly Countdown, Season 3, Episode 10, our season finale. And not only the season finale, but the final episode of The Deadly Countdown. But don't worry, we're not going anywhere in terms of a true crime show. What we're going to do is we are going to completely rebrand the entire surface of what you're hearing. So basically, from our fourth season onwards, it's technically season one of a new show. That show will be called True Crime Tuesday. And as the name suggests, it will be released on a Tuesday. Now, you might be wondering why this whole change has took place. Well, I'll explain. Basically, I'm a podcaster for the last 6 years, and it's always been in the realm of the paranormal or supernatural, an area I'm completely comfortable talking about. So therefore, I have a few podcasts, all based in that genre. But I've always been fascinated with true crime. However, I didn't know the right way from a podcast point of view to ever approach the subject. Because we're not talking about ghosts or things which can be questioned. We're talking about cold hard facts. We're talking about real lives affected by horrendous crimes. And I was never sure I had the ability to pull that off. But what I do know is that now, after doing this, my 30th episode in the true crime genre, I feel like I finally found my feet. Even if you compare this episode to episode 1, you should notice there's a difference. I'm clearly more comfortable speaking as myself. I'm more comfortable in my own true crime podcasting skin, so to speak. So, as this is the end of season 3, as usual, we will take a few weeks break and we'll return with our new show, True Crime Tuesday, on Tuesday the 25th of June. Now, if you're one of our Patreons, do not worry. We will just change the name of the Patreon. And if you're not a Patreon, why not head over to patreon.com/thedeadlycountdown and you can get the entire back catalogue of our Patreon-only podcast, Cold Case. And not only will that give you things to listen to while there's no episodes coming out, but you can also proudly say, I was a Patreon when it was The Deadly Countdown. And what do you need to do if you're a subscriber or a Patreon? Well, nothing. That will all happen in the background. But we have a finale to do, so for Robert Lee Yates, let's start the clock. Robert Lee Yates Jr. is one of America's most notorious serial killers. Primarily active in Spokane, Washington, from 1975 to 1998, Yates embarked on a deadly spree, one that left at least 11 women dead in Spokane alone. But his murderous activities were not just confined to Spokane. Yates also confessed to murders in Walla Walla in 1975 and Skagit County in 1988. But what makes this particular case harrowing is not just the sheer number of victims, but the prolonged period over which Yates committed these crimes. Over 2 decades. He even managed to elude capture, all the while maintaining a seemingly normal life as a husband, a father, even a decorated military officer. In this episode, we're going to trace Yates' path. The path from his early years through his military service, and we'll examine the details of these gruesome crimes. Of course, we'll explore the exhaustive investigation that did eventually lead to his capture. And we'll also delve into his trial, the psychological factors that might have driven him to commit these utterly heinous acts. As we go through this episode, I'll point out some of the key moments where the investigation took significant turns, as well as some really chilling details about Yates' methods and his psychological profile. This will be a deep dive, so get a cup of tea, whatever you want to drink, and let's sit down and start this look at the twisted life of Robert Lee Yates Jr. Well, our journey begins in the mid-70s. It's a period that's marked by significant cultural and social changes in the States. As we look at each phase of Yates' activities, we'll not only look at the facts and the timelines, but also hear from all of those who were directly impacted by his actions. Family members of the victims, law enforcement officers who worked tirelessly to solve the case, and even psychological experts who offer an insight into what makes someone, well, become capable of several murders. Robert Lee Yates was born on May the 27th, 1952, in Oak Harbor, Washington. Growing up in a normal middle-class family and from the outside, his life seemed unremarkable. Yates was raised in a strict but supportive household, and he was taught the values of hard work and discipline. He attended Oak Harbor High School, where he was known to be quiet and reserved, and there were no real red flags, during his youth at least, that would hint at his future as a serial killer. When he graduated in 1970, Yates briefly attended college, but he decided to enlist in the army in 75. It seems like this decision would play a crucial role in shaping who he became in his adult life. His military career was actually quite distinguished. He served as a helicopter pilot, and his expertise saw him go to places like Germany and even Somalia. His skills would even earn him several medals and commendations. He even got the prestigious Army Commendation Medal. But you could argue that this successful career only added to his facade of normality and respectability. It's fascinating, really. We often think of serial killers as individuals who show early signs of violent tendencies, animal cruelty, arson, things like that. But not Yates. He doesn't fit that mold at all. He's the guy next door. The reliable neighbour. Not even just a reliable neighbour. This guy had proudly served his country and looked after his family. He was the all-round, ideal American male. It does make you wonder about the people that we interact with every day and just what they may be hiding. Yates married Linda Brewer in 76, and together they had five children. Now, by all accounts, Yates was a devoted husband and father, and his family life appeared stable. There was no indication of the darkness that lurked beneath. Friends and neighbours even described him as friendly, hard-working, a good, solid provider for his family. But there were aspects of Yates' life that, if you looked close enough, hinted at his double life. Because despite this outward appearance, Yates frequented areas known for prostitution. He had a history of extramarital affairs. But these activities were well hidden from both his family and friends, contributing to his ability to maintain his cover for so long. Also, Yates' military background provided him with skills he would later use in his crimes. His training as a helicopter pilot meant not only was he very intelligent, he was also meticulous, disciplined, and had a keen understanding of how to avoid detection. All of these attributes combined, along with his outwardly respectable persona, made him an extraordinarily difficult criminal to catch. In the summer of 1975, Yates Jr. committed his first known murders in Walla Walla, Washington. These early crimes were a prelude to the horrific spree that would follow in later years. The victims, Patrick Oliver and Susan Savage, were a young couple whose lives were brutally cut short. Patrick and Susan were last seen alive on July the 13th, 1975. They'd been enjoying a summer day together, unaware it would be their last. Their bodies were discovered in a wooded area near Walla Walla a few days later. The couple had been shot multiple times, and their bodies left in a secluded spot, partially hidden by the dense foliage. The investigation into their murders, well, it was challenging from the onset. There were no immediate suspects, and the seemingly random nature of the crime made it difficult for law enforcement to piece together any coherent narrative. Yates, who was new to the area and had no criminal record, was clearly not going to be on anyone's radar. Imagine the fear and the confusion that must have gripped the area at the time. A young couple, full of life and plans for the future, suddenly snatched away in such a violent manner. And even worse, little did anyone guess, this was just the beginning. The Walla Walla murders were a cold case for over two decades. And it wasn't until Yates was caught, and later confessed, that these crimes were linked to him. During his confession, Yates provided detailed information that only the killer would have known, and this confirmed his involvement in those murders. His ability to evade detection after those initial murders can be attributed to several things. Firstly, the forensic technology of the 70s was nowhere near what we have today. Secondly, as we've mentioned, he had no criminal record. His military background gave him an aura of respectability. No one's going to suspect this guy. And finally, his method of selecting victims who were not connected to him made it difficult for any investigator to form a pattern. It's incredible to think, really, just how much forensic science has evolved since the 70s. Today, even the smallest piece of evidence could be the key to solving a case. But back then, without DNA analysis and databases, etc., detectives had to rely on more traditional and very slow methods. And when the killer is as meticulous and clever as Yates, well, it makes their job extremely difficult. The fact he managed to slip through the net for so long is kind of a testament to just how cunning he was, and a sobering reminder of the challenges that law enforcement back then faced. After these initial murders in 1975, Yates, for some reason, laid low for over a decade. There are no known killings linked to him. This period of apparent inactivity has puzzled investigators and criminologists alike. But in 1988, Yates would reappear and commit another brutal murder, this time in Skagit County, Washington. On December the 28th, 1988, the body of 23-year-old Stacy Hahn was found in the county. She again had been shot multiple times, and her body again discovered in a remote area. The investigation into Stacy's murder faced significant challenges, just like the earlier cases. No immediate leads. A random crime. Detectives struggled to connect any dots. It's fascinating to think, what did he get up to during this hiatus of a decade? Was he actually inactive? Or did he just commit crimes we don't know about? Stacy's murder bore striking similarities to the earlier crimes by Yates. The use of a firearm, the remote disposal of the body, and again the lack of any apparent connection between Yates and the victim. But again, without any DNA or advanced forensic techniques, the crime was destined to become cold. And indeed it did. Much like the earlier Walla Walla murders. And again, it wasn't until Yates' eventual arrest and confession in 2000 that the true scope of his activities began to unravel. And again, during his confession, Yates provided specific details about Stacey Hahn's murder that only the murderer would know.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today. If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to countrymd.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GUNDRYMD.com/energy.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Yates' ability to compartmentalize both sides of his life, the devoted family man and the cold-blooded killer, made it difficult for anyone to suspect him. It's like he was living in two parallel universes. In one, the loving father, the model citizen, a dedicated soldier. In the other, a predator, preying on the weak and leaving a trail of devastation. It raises so many questions about the nature of evil and how someone can hide such a dark streak for so long. As we go on, we'll see more of this disturbing duality and how it ultimately leads to his downfall. Between 1996 and 98, Yates committed a series of brutal murders in Spokane that would finally bring his reign of terror to an end. During that period, 11 women at least fell victim to Yates' gruesome acts. These murders were characterized by a chilling pattern and a level of brutality that left the community in a state of fear and bewilderment. Yates's victims during this period were primarily women involved in prostitution or struggling with addictions. This demographic chosen by Yates made them vulnerable targets, and therefore obviously less likely to draw immediate and sustained attention. Yates would typically pick up his victims in his vehicle. He'd offer them money for sex and drive them to a secluded area, and then he would shoot them and dispose of their bodies. The first of these murders occurred on August the 26, 1996, when Yates killed 38-year-old Jennifer Joseph. Her body was discovered on August 26th in an empty lot, a plastic grocery bag covering her head. An eerie signature that would become associated with all of Yates' later crimes. The plastic bag was like a deliberate attempt to dehumanize his victims and avoid any forensic evidence. It's terrifying to think about the fear that must have been in these women. Vulnerable already due to their circumstance and easy prey for someone like him. Someone who would exploit their desperation. And the use of a grocery bag as a mask. It's not even just cold and calculated. It strips away their identity. It's these kind of details that bring home the horror of this individual. As the bodies began to accumulate, law enforcement faced increasing pressure to find him. The Spokane Police Department, along with the FBI, launched an intensive investigation. The detectives noted several similarities amongst the cases. The victims' profiles, the method of murder, the locations where the bodies were found. But despite these commonalities, the investigation was still stuck with the lack of direct evidence linking the crimes to an actual individual. One of the significant challenges was the killer's apparent familiarity with forensic science. Yates was meticulous in cleaning the crime scenes and avoided leaving any traceable evidence behind. It was likely his military training contributed to this approach, and it made him a formidable adversary. You can almost feel the frustration of the detectives. They knew they were dealing with a methodical, clever, calculated killer. Someone who was always one step ahead. Like the highest stakes game of cat and mouse, but one with devastating consequences. The level of determination and patience they must have needed to keep going forward in such a daunting investigation is really quite commendable. The breakthrough in the case finally came in April 2000, when detectives, following up on a tip, linked Yates to a white Corvette that had been seen in areas where several victims had disappeared. They finally managed to obtain a warrant for Yates' home and vehicles. And it was during that search that they found bloodstains and a .25 caliber handgun, one that would later be matched to the bullets recovered from some of the victims. DNA evidence was the final nail in the coffin. You see, Yates' DNA matched samples taken from the previous victims, and it conclusively linked them to the murders. On April 18th, 2000, Robert Lee Yates Jr. was arrested and charged with multiple counts of first-degree murder. You can only imagine the mix of relief and horror that must have washed over the community when he was finally caught. Relief that a killer was off the streets, but a horror in realizing who it was. It wasn't the silent guy down the road or the weirdo in the library. It was a good all-American boy. And he'd been out murdering people for 2 decades. Yater's trial began on September the 19th, 2000, in Spokane County Superior Court. The prosecution, led by Deputy Prosecutor Jack Driscoll, presented a comprehensive case. They laid out the pattern of his crimes, the evidence collected, and the chilling details of his confessions. The defense, led by public defender Richard Fassi, attempted to argue for leniency. They even highlighted Yater's military service and lack of a prior criminal record. Now, I genuinely struggled to comprehend that when I read it. I just don't see how you can argue previous good behavior. Yes, in terms of maybe, I don't know, a street fight altercation. Maybe in a petty crime. How do you try and use that as an argument against an actual serial killer? I mean, come on. For God's sake, there's a line. A pivotal moment in the trial came when Yates changed his plea to guilty. This plea agreement was part of a deal for him to avoid the death penalty. You see, in exchange for his guilty plea to 13 murders, Yates was sentenced to the not-too-tiny sum of 408 years in prison without the possibility of parole. This agreement also required Yates to disclose information about other murders he'd committed, which provided closure for the families of the additional victims. The 26th of October 2000, Judge Richard Schroeder formally sentenced Yates to 408 years in prison. During the sentencing, Yates apologized to the families of his victims, a gesture that is obviously insufficient, given the gravity of his crimes. The courtroom was filled with emotional statements from the victims' families, expressing their grief, anger, and sense of loss. Can you imagine? Could you imagine losing a loved one to murder? And then at the trial of said murderer, they apologize. Well, thank you kindly. That's about as useful as an ashtray on a motorbike. It's terrifying to think how his military training, something meant to protect and serve, was twisted into a tool for not just committing, but concealing his crimes. This discipline and meticulousness that made him a good soldier made him a very efficient killer. And it's a stark reminder of how skills can be twisted and perverted by a twisted and perverted mind. It's also interesting that we often look at childhood and upbringing to see any potential early indicators of criminal behaviour. But this was not the case here. And it goes to show that somebody who seems to be, as I said earlier, the all-American boy, and I'm not singling out America here, this is just for this case, insert the country of your choice. But not every murderer pulls legs off dragonflies or tortures animals or sets fires to things in their youth. Some of them just go to school, have a girlfriend, carry on with their education, have a career, smile at you in the street, feed your cat when you're on vacation. You know, these things aren't always as obvious as we believe. And that's what makes this such a startling case. If anything, it's arguably one of the most terrifying ones we've ever covered. Because this is your everyday person. It is. There's no mystery. There's no air of suspense. There's no darkness about this individual until it's uncovered. And that, for me anyway, is the most terrifying thing. I've experienced it, and I know that you probably have too, where somebody that you know or you're aware of in your neighbourhood is maybe arrested, or they do something, and a member of your family or your friendship group will turn round and say, "I always thought there was something about them, something that didn't sit right with me." I've heard that said numerous times about many different individuals when they've been either arrested or you read about them in the newspaper and somebody has known them. The thing is, that friendship group, even that familial circle, could contain a Robert Lee Yates Jr. And albeit a minimal chance, this very episode proves that it takes place. And that's enough to keep me awake at night. Mind you, that's why it's best not to dwell on cases like this, because you'd never end up leaving the house. Anyway, thank you all for joining me throughout the last 3 seasons of The Deadly Countdown. Or should I say, thank you for joining me as I found my way around the podcasting world of true crime. Be sure to join me when I return, fresh out of the cocoon, with a new show completely, True Crime Tuesday. And that will debut on Tuesday the 25th of June. If you've already subscribed to The Deadly Countdown, or you're already a Patreon member of The Deadly Countdown, you do not need to do a single thing. You don't need to search for anything new. Everything will change on my end. You will just see an updated picture for the show, and obviously a change of title. And you will hear a new format. For our Patreons, do not be concerned. Nothing changes there. You will still receive the debut of that show before anyone else, and ad-free. And of course, the Patreon-only podcast, Cold Case, will remain exactly the same. So there are 0 changes there. I would say, if you're not yet a Patreon, head over to patreon.com/thedeadlycountdown, and you could be one of those to say, "I was there when it was The Deadly Countdown." Because once we begin True Crime Tuesday, all of the previous episodes here will become bonus episodes, as we start afresh from Season 1, Episode 1 of True Crime Tuesday. And I can't wait. So I'll speak to you on Tuesday the 25th of June for our first ever episode of True Crime Tuesday. And until then, take care.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.